Live from the Hanania studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express.
What I love is our mindset is I truly believe that Chad and Blaine are competing against themselves, and that's what makes it such a good situation for us, and they're making each other better.
We're looking ahead to the next Jaguars game with Brian Sexton and former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, and Mark Brunel, sponsored by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now.
All right, here we go. Hour number two of Jaguars Thursday. Thanks to head coach Gus Bradley for joining us for the last 60 minutes. Now we bring in two greats, Mark Brunel and Tony Baselli.
Okay.
I just assumed you were already here. So we got three greats in here, three guys you all know and love.
Two greats and some has-been named Loggeman.
I didn't say that.
What are you trying to say?
I'm just saying what Brian said.
I would have said three greats.
Hey, look, he was referring to me and him. Oh, okay. Not you two.
I can stumble all over myself. Don't help me. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. So here's the question of the night, guys. You ready? Blaine Gabbert, in his first two seasons as a starter, 21 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, passer rating of about 70.2, completed 53.8% of his passes.
Yeah.
No one's excited about him. Anywhere you go, national media, Blaine. In fact, Monday Morning Quarterback site, they said Jed Fish is the man to save Blaine Gabbert. Now, flip it. The quarterback who's coming in here tomorrow night, Ryan Tannehill, 12 touchdowns last year, 13 interceptions, 58% completions, passer rating 76.1, and everyone's talking about how the Dolphins are on their way up. He could be the next great quarterback. So what's the difference? I mean, if the numbers are routinely the same, and, you know, I gave Blaine's two-year numbers, Blaine's rookie season and Tannehill's are remarkably consistent with one another. Why the excitement about Tannehill, and why is Gabbert getting the jab from everybody?
Well, I'd say part of it is the Jaguars last year were 2-14, and the Dolphins were 7-9. Two different markets, two different histories. There's a couple reasons I would imagine why that's the case.
Well, I think also there were times in doing a couple of Dolphins games on the radio last year and covering them, there were games as a rookie that you saw like, wow, this guy, I mean, he had command of the game. He didn't look like a rookie. And not just the numbers. I mean, the numbers are something obviously that are an indicator of what a guy's doing, but his presence and how he handled the situation and how he led the team, whether it's from behind or in important stretches, glimpses were very good. And that coupled with the fact, like Mark said, he was on a 7-9 team, I think that gives people a little bit more hope where year one, it was a disaster. I mean, and I'm not just saying Blaine, the entire thing, the coaching staff being fired, the way Blaine was asked to come in after David all of a sudden's gone.
Well, and he's throwing the ball to Chasten West.
Well, and the other thing to add into that, now the Miami Dolphins went out and spent, $110-something million
this year
on weapons.
Yeah, Mike Wallace and everything else. Yeah. And so that, and then last year, I think if Blaine doesn't get hurt and he can finish off the year, I think he ends up, because if you think back in the first half of that year, he had a few games that are like.
Hey. Vikings game on opening day, 260, two touchdowns.
I mean, he looked pretty good. I mean, he said this guy's taking the next step.
303 and a touchdown in Green Bay.
I mean, Pete Metzler, who was here at practice the other day, we were talking about it, and he said, as a independent, no dog in the fight, said, "Boy, I really thought Blaine took a big step last year, and he looked like."
And Metz Lars like, was a coach Indianapolis and
Colts,
Buffalo,
absolutely a long time tight end. Yeah, I should have said that, long time tight end in the league and coach. And he, without me saying anything, he said, "Man, Blaine took a big step last year from his rookie year." And so I think people forget that because you look how it ended. He gets hurt. You know, the things that Mike Mularkey said did not help. You know, here he was a guy fighting for his job and was on the hot seat, so he jumps to Chad Henne saying he's my starter and all the drama. I think all those added together, there's a bad taste in people's mouths about Blaine. And the reality is Blaine has to be more consistent. He has to the glimpses that we see and the moments we see where he's played so well, we need to see more of that. That with winning will make people feel better.
Now, to be fair, this week, there was a practice where Tannehill threw four interceptions in Miami, and it was open to the media, and people are piling on him down there right now. You know, can he, will he? And it brings us to the fact that when you're in that position, young quarterback, every eye is on you.
Mark can tell you better than anybody.
Yeah, that's why I'm looking right at him.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're a young quarterback, especially these days when there's guys like RG3 that come out in their first year and come out and just – play like veterans. Andrew Luck comes out, plays like a veteran. There's just that is what's happening. We've got some young guys that are playing at a very high level very early. So they have created the standard now by which all these other young quarterbacks, it's tough. It takes time. It takes time to develop a young quarterback. And we have to remember, and we'll continue to say it, Blaine's a puppy. He's 23 years old. He's third year into it. And I'd be interested to see, if you go back and you look at Peyton Manning's numbers early on, his first couple years.
He had more interceptions than touchdowns his first year.
There you go. If you looked at Drew Brees, you looked at, Tom Brady wasn't even on the field.
Drew Brees' numbers are remarkably similar his first 2 years to Blaine's.
Got rid of Drew Brees in San Diego. They basically said, we choose Philip Rivers. Now, Philip
Rivers. They spent a high draft pick on Rivers with Brees there.
Still there. You can go back. There's countless. Eli Manning was literally getting ready to be kicked out of New York.
0.0 passer rating against the Ravens his rookie year. Terrible.
No, he was getting ready to kicked out of league year three because Tom was going to get fired. They were a disaster. He can't do it. They get hot, go in the playoffs, win the Super Bowl. He's the MVP, and now he's one of the top, considered, a top-tier quarterback in this league.
Look, I don't think any of us here are saying, hey, look, that's going to be the path for Blaine Gabbert.
We're saying patience.
We're just saying, hey, look.
It's just interesting to look how people are perceived.
You can't come to a verdict yet.
But you know what? It begs the question, because last year we were assaulted with the question. Well, Gabbert can't be the guy. Look what Luck is doing. Look what RG3 is doing. Is there still a place to develop quarterbacks in this league?
Don't forget Russell Wilson.
Oh, he was terrific.
Colin Kaepernick year two. Second year, really his first year starting.
So if you get to year two and you haven't established yourself as a young quarterback, are you a bust automatically now?
Well, I think in today's – and it's not – listen, it's quarterbacks obviously is amplified in the young quarterbacks, but –
And top 10 pick has a lot to do with it.
I mean, think about just how we judge teams and players. It's a week-to-week, moment-by-moment, the social media, the amount of information. I mean, a guy goes from a great player to a bust, and when you're the quarterback and the ball's in your hand every play, you're going to take the brunt of the criticism, and you're a young player, and you're not winning. It's going to be all on that guy. Trust me, there was many a games when Mark was the quarterback, and – whether it was his fault or not, now he got too much praise, too much credit when it was he had nothing to do with
it. I take it not from you.
No, not from me. But, it's going to land on that guy's lap, and that's the way it is.
Just going back a little bit, Mark, when you were finally named the starter here in 95, and it was what, midseason, right?
My first start Houston. Was week three.
In New York.
In New York.
On your birthday.
But that's only because Steve Berline was hurt.
But I'm talking being named the
regular
starter.
It was midseason.
Yeah, it was midseason, right?
Yeah.
What year was that for you?
That was halfway through my third year.
Yeah. It's people have a tendency to want to be on that RG3, that Luck, all that. And
the top 10 pick has a lot to do with it, obviously. Sure. There's a lot of pressure on Gabbert because he was selected in the top 10.
Traded up to get him.
I threw this at you the other day. And it was something that Paul Kuharsky, who a lot of people know, writes for ESPN.com. He's the AFC South blogger, wrote that I've been telling people for years, and the reality of it is he watched a play here in the scrimmage last week when he was covering the Jaguars, and it was a busted play, and Blaine ran out of the pocket to the left, threw the ball away. You probably remember the play that I think was intended down the field for Tony Clemens. And Kuharsky wrote, honestly enough, I thought it was another example of Gabbert not being good enough, not being the guy. I'm paraphrasing his thoughts. Until he went and talked to Jed Fish, who said, no, really, this player had this wrong route, and this player broke down over here. And so Gabbert did the best thing possible. He got out of the pocket and threw the ball away. That's exactly what we want. And Gaharski's theme was, sometimes you think you know, but you don't. And that's the truth, is that when you're evaluating these guys in the preseason games, the quarterback is always going to have someone who is making him look bad.
No question. And you know what? And when we're out there, I know what I'm looking at, but I still don't know. Unless I was sitting in that film room.
You're talking from an evaluation
process. Point of view. And if I'm in that film room and I'm hearing Jed Fish's comments and I'm hearing Gus Bradley's comments and I'm looking at the tape and I'm thinking, okay, well, there's the breakdown and Blaine did something well, maybe he didn't. You just don't know unless you're there.
Well, it's not just the quarterback. How about Eugene Monroe? Last year, everyone thought that he was the guy who was getting tagged for all those sacks, and there were guys moving all over the field, and they start lined up across him and stunts. And when you're the left tackle, it's not just as obvious as saying, well, if that guy got the sack, it had to be because he beat Baselli.
But listen, the reality is this: it's simple. When you're 2-14, everyone stinks. it is. You're no good. one of the worst teams in the league. And guess what? When you're the quarterback, they're going to blame you. When you're a high-priced player like Eugene Marone, you're a high draft pick and you're the left tackle, you're going to get blamed. When you're, you know, name the position. If you're a high-profile guy that are supposed to play at a high level and it doesn't look like you're, you know, your unit or your offense or defense or your team's having success, you are going to get the blame. And the first guy is going to be the quarterback.
Yeah, left tackle.
And I prefer us not to be blamed for anything, but that's reality. And the bottom line is this team needs to get better. And
that's perception is what I'm saying, not reality.
But here's the reality. The quarterbacks have to be better.
And the reality is, guys, is that this is Blaine Gabbert's most important preseason of his career.
Yes.
Of his career. It's time.
Here's the tough thing, though. Who's he throwing to starting tomorrow night?
Mike Brown,
right?
Sanders.
Yep. I mean, we're talking
Muhammad Masakoi.
How many starts do these guys have that are going to be, you know, his receiving core tomorrow night?
Right. Now, this is what he'll be judged on. It'll be his decision-making. Now, if he throws one into double coverage and if you get picked, you know, he can still make good decisions. You know, if a guy drops it or he doesn't run a great route, I get it. But he's just going to have to go out there regardless of who he's throwing to and just play smart football. And I think he knows that.
But I think it's more than just playing smart football. I mean, I agree with all that. But he's got to show a command of the situation, a command of the offense, a command of when the blitz comes and the ability to slide and move in the pocket and buy a little bit of time. And even if everything's not going down the field great, even if his numbers aren't great, I think people know the game, and as you watch the game and as you evaluate, and especially the coaches, you understand that because of what the injuries and everything else. But what we don't want to see tomorrow night is an erratic quarterback, a guy who's looks like the perception, and whether it's real or not, it's hard to tell unless you're in the film, but looks scatterbrained or looks, you know, uncomfortable. And that's what we saw. That's why Blaine got so much criticism year one, because that's what it looked like. The reason I thought he took a big step is because you saw more confidence, you saw more calmness, you saw more command of the offense last year. And if he takes another step in that progress, in that progression, then that's a good sign to me watching that game.
Well, just back to perception versus reality. If you go back to that first year where he looked so scatterbrained in the pocket, I go back to who he was throwing to. And nobody really accounted.
No, but he had no.
Chaston West, Mike Thomas. I mean,
but I think it's more than that, Brian. I think, if I remember correctly, talking to Blaine last year in the preseason, he basically said he walked up there and was trying to figure out what the heck was going on. I mean, really.
Kind of like what
that's
you were
reality.
Explaining last week.
I mean, that's
Mark,
reality.
That's reality.
He didn't know. I mean, and everyone says, oh, he's not tough. He's afraid to get hit. Blaine's tough. You have to be, I mean.
Torn labrum in his shoulder.
I mean, he's a tough kid. Has nothing to do that. But you ask anyone who played that position. Heck, I'll take it from the offensive line position. If you walk up there and you have no idea what the heck's going on and they're blitzing and people are going, you are going to be unsettled and not very good. And multiply that by 1,000 if you're the quarterback and you have 11 guys moving and you're responsible for your offense, you're trying to figure out blitzes and protections and routes and everything else, and you have no clue, you're going to drop back there and it's going to look like things are going 1,000 miles an hour like you're at a NASCAR race and you're trying to pick up the numbers of the car sitting on the side as they're going by.
If he's able to come out this year and perform well, I think you have to give even that much more credit to him.
Absolutely.
Having been now on his fourth head coach, his third offensive system, and if he does what we all hope he can do, you do have to give him even more credit than you would a guy like a Drew Brees that took him a while to develop. He had the same system. You know, this is not an easy thing. It's not an easy position to play when everything else is constant. But with all these variables he's had to deal with, it would be even that much more.
Did he earn this? Did he earn the start in the preseason opener in the competition between he and Henny? Or was it just a decision, young draft pick?
What did Gus say? You guys talked to him, did he?
Well, he didn't say anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. My guess is, and this is, you talk about guessing, guess is he's going to start week one, and I think Chad's going to start week two.
Gus did say that he said, looking at everything, I mean, he was willing to give him credit, but he wasn't willing to say that the book is closed on anything. You know, so you can tell that he wants this competition to continue on.
But if I was going to guess, sitting here today, that Chad, I mean, no matter what happens, unless there's injury or something, that Blaine starts tomorrow night and Chad probably starts week two, and then I'd they decide week three who's going to be the starter and start building that way. This is my guess. I mean, we're
he who starts in the third preseason
is the
game
starter of the week
is
one.
The starter of week
right.
one.
That's about as far as you can take it before you name a starter.
That's right.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Let's take this quick timeout. We'll come back with more Jaguars Thursday, including your calls, right after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the Hanania Studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Rolling right along here, Jaguars Thursday. Brian Sexton along with Mark Brunell, Tony Boselli, Jeff Loggeman. You're free to join us, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. We mentioned tomorrow night, whoever the starting quarterback is, it's Blaine Gabbert. But whenever Chad Henne is in there as well, Cecil Shorts will not play, Justin Blackman will not play. That means you've got Muhammad Masakoi and Jordan Shipley as your old veterans. And then you've got Mike Brown, who played a little bit against the Titans in the season finale last year. But Ace Sanders and Tobias Palmer, thoughts on the wide receiver core?
I think we're going to see Ace Sanders and Mike Brown as the starting two wide receivers tomorrow night. Now, I don't know that for sure, but that would be my guess watching
practice. They've had the best camp.
Yes.
Outside of Cecil.
You know, and Muhammad Masakoi has been I don't want to say completely disappointing, but boy, I really expected him to be able to step his game up more so than any of these other young guys.
I think he's been moving down the depth chart.
And maybe that's one of the reasons why they're continuing to look at some other options. They brought in Charlie Martin this week, a guy that's got some experience playing, was in Seattle for part of his career. And you know, I have a feeling that over the next 3 to 4 weeks, this is going to be a position that is in a lot of transition when you're looking at once you get past those top four guys.
Jeff,
they're going to be looking at the waiver wire.
Jeff, you're talking about positions and where they're going to look and the groupings and strengths and weaknesses. What's the thinnest position group? And I'll ask that to everyone. What's the thinnest position group on this team?
Two of them stand out to me. Linebacker, tight end.
Who's behind Mercedes, you've got nothing proven.
I like, you know, Reisner. I think he's the second best tight end. I think,
but he's got 10 games.
Ryan Oaten has got a chance to develop, but I don't think he's quite ready. He's a young free agent rookie from San Jose State. You know, and that linebacker besides Reynolds from Virginia, I think it's pretty thin. You know, those two positions, I think, are delinquent. Now, look, all that doesn't matter if you can have some dominant players at other positions, but right now they don't.
Well, I think Brandon Marshall's having a good camp, so I would add him. I think Brandon Marshall's going to push through this preseason if he continues to do what he's done in the practice field. I think he'll push.
Yeah, but you know, Tony, he's got a lot to prove and because his contribution has to be on special teams. And special teams was not his forte last year. He's got the measurables that you say, okay, hey, look, this guy can play special teams. But there were times last year that he didn't bring that physical element to special teams that you got to have.
Well, I'll be watching him, but I think he's going to push for playing time on the defense.
Maybe.
I think he's going to push for playing time. I think he's had a very good camp. I think they like how he's worked. I think he had a great offseason. So that's a guy I'll be watching. I'm going to add another position group that we have not talked about very much as far as being thin. I think this might be as thin as they've been for a while on the offensive line.
I agree.
They are.
I agree.
You tell me who their third inside guy is going to be with any confidence that they can come in and play.
Now, when you mean third inside guy, are you talking about?
Center guard.
Center. So you're looking at the sixth offensive lineman on game day.
Well, I'm saying you're going to dress seven. You're going to have one swing tackle.
That's
and
right.
You have an inside guy.
You swing inside guy.
Yeah. Choose from these guys. Jason Spitz, who was on IR all last year, Mike Brewster, who started seven games at left guard last year, Drew Nowak, who was a defensive tackle who spent all of last year on IR, and Austin Pazdur, who had three starts at left guard.
All right, now I know that I'm going to defer to Tony, but I'm going to give you just real quick hitter on all those guys.
Sure.
Brewster, not strong enough. Nowak, project, still needs time to develop. Jason Spitz, probably your best option right now. Agree or not?
Well, I'd agree with it, but I look at that group right now. I mean, you have Brad Meester, who we all love, but 14 years, 37 years old. You have to hope that he can play all 16
games. Is he 37?
I believe he's 37, 36 maybe.
Yeah, I don't think he's that old.
14 years.
14 years. Well, however long. He's old. Yeah.
35, 36.
35, 36. However old he is. He's
in football
old.
Terms.
And very old. Yeah. Yeah.
He's ancient.
He's very young.
He's a dinosaur.
93 starts. He's 84 years old.
My point
in football
is,
terms.
Listen, there's nothing that we think Brad won't play all 16, but at that age, you know.
Six girls at home, he probably feels like he's 90.
You know, and I think one reason why we've come to, I don't want to say conclusion, but we've had thoughts on Brewster, and I think me and you are the same opinion.
I was going to say, I agree with you 100% on Brewster. I don't think he can play guard.
He's not playing with a lot of strength, and that was the knock on him coming out of college. And with Brewster, I think with the Jaguars' emphasis on big, powerful defensive linemen, has really even made his weakness more apparent in this camp than anything else.
And so I look at the inside three, and I look and say, who's your backup center? I guess it's going to be Brewster or Spitz. I don't know if Spitz has had a great camp. I think, you know, it's been average, kind of hanging in there a little bit. And then I look outside, and you look at your third tackle, you assume it's Cameron Bradfield right now. But I'll tell you, I mean, Cameron's a guy who has all the talent in the world and athletic and
he
moves.
Just needs
he doesn't
time.
Do it.
Not yet.
He doesn't do it.
Needs time.
Yeah, but you're saying you need time. Is that what you want, your third tackle? So you look at that group, you have your five starters, and then there's huge questions. You have no answer.
I think there'll be movement after this preseason game, first preseason game.
Well, there's already been some. I mean, they signed Pat McQuiston, so would not be surprised again. Is there any position group that you guys would be shocked that they addressed off of the waiver wire?
Safety.
That's the only one. You're right. That's safety. It.
Safety and running back. I don't think they'll do anything running back.
I don't know about that.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I'm not worried about running back. In today's NFL, MJD's going to take the majority of your reps.
Before we get a call, Meester turned 36 in March.
So, 36.
So he'll be 37 next March.
Yeah, so he's
an old man.
He's an old man.
Yeah, I mean, I love Brad. I mean,
But you know what? He may be right now the most consistent interior offensive lineman in training.
No. I want to disagree 100% with you. Not maybe. He is the most consistent guy in the entire.
Like where are we going with this?
I mean, it's not even close, Jeff. I mean, as far as consistency of doing his job day in and day out, the guy you can count on more than anybody else out of all the guys at the center or the guard position is Brad Meester, and the next guy is not close, and it's Will Rackley's the next guy.
On the inside three.
On the inside three.
355-NFL 1-800-355-6351. Jaguars Thursday rolling along here, and we grab Christopher in Mandarin. Hey, Christopher, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you guys all doing?
Good.
First of all, I want to say, hey, Mark Grinnell, it's glad to see you again. Glad you're back in Jacksonville.
Thank you, Christopher.
I have a question. It's a quarterback question. What would be a good alternative to having one starting QB instead of having to do both QBs, Henning and Gabbert, running the same, like, different plays in the same game to try to confuse the offense?
One answer. No. No.
Why?
Now why?
Well, you know, as a quarterback, if you...
Rhythm.
It's that's the word. It's rhythm. You've got to get into a rhythm. You've got to get a feel for the game. You can't go in and out and expect to play at a high level. It's just... You know, the great ones at this league right now, they don't come off the field. You don't want them off the field, and rhythm is a reason for it.
I'll say as an offensive lineman, I want one guy. We talked about it last year. I've said it this offseason about I understand what Gus is doing with the competition. I agree with it. You have to do it. But that is not ideal at that position. As an offensive lineman, as a guy in the offensive huddle, that guy is the leader. He's the leader of the offense. I mean, whether, you know, no matter what, I don't care. You can have other leaders, and there's other leaders on the team. When you step in the huddle, that is the guy that everyone's looking to, everyone's counting on, the guy to get you in the play, get you out of the wrong play, make something happen. And if that guy's rotating in and out, that's a problem.
Absolutely.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. We've hit the bottom of the hour here, and it's time for news. When we return, more conversation leading up to the Jaguars preseason opener tomorrow night against the Miami Dolphins. Things begin at 4:30 right here on News Talk WOKV with the Publix Tailgate Show. We pick up the network at 6:30, kickoff at 7:30. We're back with more after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the Hanania Studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
All right, here we go. Jaguars and Dolphins tomorrow night from Everbank Field. 4:30 for the Publix Tailgate Show. Pre-game starts at 6:30. kickoff at 7:30. Are you ready for your first game?
I'm ready to roll.
Yeah?
Let's go.
These two guys preceded you in the booth. Have they given you any advice, or have they just silently mocked
you? No, they have given me...
No, the mocking will be after tomorrow night.
Yeah, that'll be coming my way. No question. But, no, Jeff and Tony have given me gold. They've been a huge help, and they've been there, so I listen to them. So it's, it'll be the first one. I'm looking forward to it.
Going to get a little production dinner tonight with
Kevin Kugler.
Going over.
Good guy.
Just say, I'm just going to buy you dinner, Kevin. Just take care of me. Make it easy.
He'll make it easy. He's good.
He is good.
Well, he'll be stunned that you're buying dinner, because I'm sure Buscelli didn't buy him dinner.
Probably not.
Not once.
No.
355 NFL
so
one.
So Kugler's buying dinner for you tonight. Right. You're buying him.
He's
no.
buying him dinner.
I'm buying him dinner.
Oh, okay.
Where are we going?
Where are we going, Tony?
Come on, we can help. Hey, Roos, Chris, 8:15. Let's go.
I'm good.
I got clothes in the car.
Now I'm only buying for Kugler. Now, I don't think.
Whoa!
Especially since you're going to be mocking me
about
24.
All this help you just talked about that we've given you gold.
Is it worth something?
Wasn't
gold.
The term gold used?
It was gold. It was gold. Okay. But we're not. We're not through it yet.
You got to be real careful.
Ruth Chris will take gold as payment.
Yeah.
CBS 47 has the telecast tomorrow night, and obviously you have a pregame show that starts at 7 o'clock. So. Lots of excitement getting ready for this thing. It's all new. New coach, new GM.
And then the new uniforms, the new look, everything. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow night.
Grab a couple of phone calls here. 355-NFL-1. Cameron joins us from the South Side. Cameron, welcome to the show.
How are you doing, Brian?
We're doing good tonight.
And by the way, do we have a new teammate this year? I've heard a legendary voice in the background there.
Are you talking about Brunell?
Yes.
Legendary. I like you, Cameron.
How are you doing, Tony?
I'm good.
How about them Jags?
How about them Jags, buddy? I like that. I'm good.
What's your thought on the defense, Cameron? Cameron, tell us about the defense. What do you want to know?
We lost Cameron.
All right.
Well,
he wanted to talk about the defense, but I'm not sure exactly what he wanted to talk about. So. We'll find out tomorrow night.
Yeah. Listen, this defense, I'm excited about watching. We've talked a lot about the offense and what we
have. We've worn out the quarterbacks.
Listen, the defense is interesting to me because it's night and day to what we've seen the last several years under Mel Tucker. Mel Tucker and Jeff, we talked about this constantly last year on the Wednesday night show, was a cover two, kind of soft, keep everything in front of you type of defense. Not a lot of blitz. Didn't pressure the quarterback. Now, they did later because they had to, because they could get no pressure any other way. Gus Bradley's defense under Bob Babich is a single high, meaning one deep guy, the other safety's going to be in the box. They're going to come after
you. They're going to stop the run.
They're going to put a ton of pressure on the corners outside. Allen Ball and Grotz, the rookie out of UConn, is a ton of pressure, a lot of press, a lot of man. And it's going to give up some big plays, but it's going to make a lot of big plays and a lot of excitement. And just turn on the Seattle games of last year, and that's a fun defense to watch. They get after it. And I'm looking forward to that as much as anything, Jeff, of watching that defense fly around.
I'm looking very, very much towards seeing the way the corners can perform in this defense, because you're right, Tony, in that this is a very demanding defense for the corner position. And so Dwayne Grotz is going to have some tough moments. Allen Ball is going to have some tough moments. But I like the concept of getting in the face of a wide receiver at the line of scrimmage, because under Mel Tucker, that was the one complaint that I had, is he played a lot of cover two, which I'm okay with that. But he didn't get the corners up and play press.
It was a soft cover two, too.
And to me, I mean, in the league, you're legally allowed to be physical within a five-yard area. Why ignore that one allowable point that you can hammer an offensive player? And I never kind of understood that. But it had worked, I guess, wherever he had been. It didn't work for him when it came to coverage.
And you're going to see, staying on the defense, see Tyson Alualu in a new position, playing the defensive end position, which I've been very
He's looking better.
Impressed with him in the preseason.
He had one moment in practice 2 days ago, to where he was matched up against Mercedes, and all of a sudden I saw Mercedes getting thrown towards the ground. I'm like,
doesn't happen often.
No, there's not very many people that I've ever seen do that to Mercedes. So that's a good sign.
Speaking of Mercedes, what kind of camp has he had?
Real good.
In all aspects?
Yeah, real good.
I mean, I know you guys were talking about how dominant a blocker he's become.
You know, and what I've liked about him is that he has come out and really competed in practice. You know, the one instance he had a little kind of mix up with Jason Babin. You know, when you see him kind of blocking all the way to the end and trying to really put it to Jason Babin, you like that. Instead of, you know, those two guys kind of just not competing and just kind of going through the motions like me and Baselli used to do at times. You know, I like it. It got heated. And you can see that he's really taken a leadership role working with some of these younger tight ends. Every day, I mean, have we ever seen a day where Mercedes has just kind of coasted through a drill? And, you know, veterans sometimes will do that. I've not seen that out of him yet.
Well, he's coming off a year that was, you know, four touchdowns, the year he got paid. Everyone's making a big deal out of that. And it appears he's really focused in camp. I mean, every route he runs, as you mentioned, he seems to put all the effort into it.
You know, he's still not, you know, the greatest catcher in the world, you know, as far as soft hands. He has moments where he struggles with it a little bit. But I think this may be his best camp yet that he's ever had at catching the ball. You know, and I don't think he's a natural pass catcher, you know, like an Antonio Gates or like certainly not like Gonzalez in Atlanta, who's probably the best ever. But it's gotten better, and I like that about him.
Are we making too much of the fact that he'll be able to get out in the route this year?
No, I think I like to hear what Mark thinks about this, but a lot of times tight ends, safety blank, you know, is kind of a safety outlet for something that comforts a quarterback. Big target, work the middle of the field, can get some good matchups against smaller defensive backs, safeties. And so if Mercedes can improve that, and he has, he's looked good in camp, that's going to be an added benefit to Blaine, knowing that you got a guy outside. I mean, a guy at the tight end position, he's big, he's strong, he's physical. You can throw it in places that he can go up and win the 50-50 ball. And I think it's huge. I think it's a big addition to this offense if he can get out in the route and continue take what he's done on the practice field into the game.
Yeah, I tell you, it just reminds me of when we had Kyle. Big guy, physical guy, could block, could run routes, could catch the ball. And you talk about an asset for a quarterback. I mean, having a guy like Mercedes is huge, particularly for Blaine in this year. It's critical that you get him the ball. He can perform. He's got some good football left.
Well, in one of the two-minute drills this week, he made a catch on the sideline, and he's such a big body. And he effortlessly just put that other foot down and turned right up the field. I mean, it was like, whoa. That would be big to have in the offense this year. We haven't seen it from him.
No, and you could tell that there's an emphasis by Jed Fish that they want to get him the ball in the red zone. You know, you see him run a lot of routes to where they don't care if it's covered. They're going to put it high and let Mercedes have a chance at it or nobody else.
It'd be crazy not to.
Yeah, I mean, what is he, 6'7"?
He's a beast.
I mean, yeah, he's just giant.
Incredibly long arms and big hands.
Yeah, big guy. You know, so I would not be surprised this year if his touchdown numbers don't go back and approach what they did from a couple years ago. Just because he's going to be a guy that's going to get targeted a bunch.
Well, it's not just the touchdown numbers. I think it's the receptions, it's the catches, it's the conversions on third and medium, it's the outlets, it's just getting that position involved. I mean, you think about last year, it was non-existent. I mean, so if you didn't win outside, where were you going to go with the ball? And now you get that tight end work in the middle of the field, holding linebackers. I mean, some easy routes, some easy throws and catches for the quarterback, for Blaine or Chad, whoever it is. And that's an added dimension that we have not seen had.
And hopefully this week coming up, this offense will see Justin Blackman get back out on the practice field.
Any word on that?
I'm not sure. I talked with him yesterday, and Justin said that he is feeling great, you know, but I think he's, you know, 5 weeks or something after surgery, you know, and had the groin surgery, which for any skill position player, that can't be viewed as anything minor. I mean, that's significant. But you want to see him start to get the work, because he's going to need to get as much work as possible, because he's going to miss the first 4 games of the season. But you want to have some chemistry start to develop with the quarterbacks between now and then. And it looks like he has a chance maybe next week, and also along the injury front, maybe getting Jonathan Cyprian back. And if they can get those two back next week, I think it's going to help this football team a bunch.
All right, we need a break. More to come. One more segment, Jaguars Thursday. Here here on News Talk WOKV, and we continue after this. You're listening to Jaguars Radio. Experienced team of scouts to find the best players. At EverBank, you can also have a dedicated team working just as hard for you when it's time to look for a mortgage. Whether it's fixed or adjustable rate, FHA, VA, or jumbo, we'll put our local team of experts on the clock to quickly and efficiently handle every part of your loan so you get a solution that fits your financial situation. Connect with EverBank and their team of experts locally or online at everbank.com/lendingteam. The official bank of the Jacksonville Jaguars, EverBank is an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the Hanania Studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Loggy's on the internet over there looking at the menu, trying to figure out what you're buying him for dinner tomorrow.
I'm a high school football coach now. You know it's not like the old days where, you know, we can just go to Roost Chris and, you know, five or six of us.
And just to update everyone listening, Jeff and I, after we were told we were gold for all the input.
The information was gold.
Oh, we were gold. That Mark invited us to Roost Chris for dinner, and he's buying. I mean,
would be an expensive meal.
It
sounds like it's going to be.
We've accepted. I'm looking forward to it. Loggy's already informed Mark he's getting the bone-in ribeye.
Wonderful.
Absolutely. Why not?
I'll just get the petite filet. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. That didn't make him feel any better. Hey, did you see Wes Welker's comments this week?
I did. I did. You know, and a lot was made out of it. And do you have the exact?
I do. And it's
go
not.
Ahead and read it first.
Right, so here you go. It was just kind of hard, Welker said. One of those deals where you have to endure him, put up with him, but he does it to everybody. It's the way he is.
And he is Bill Belichick, and it was an interview that he did in Denver. I didn't see that big of a deal to where it would make, you know, a national storyline, but it involves a player of the Wes Welker stature and obviously a head coach of the stature of Bill Belichick, maybe the best football coach in the game today. I didn't see it was a big deal. But, you know, because you heard the same things out of Phil Sims when he talked about Bill Parcells. You heard the same thing out of guys that played for Tom Coughlin. But, you know, once they get away from the game and get away from them for a while, they turn around and the opinion changes to where they show a great appreciation and a better understanding for what that coach did for them at that point.
And the reason is, at the end of the day, most of us in the midst of it, we complain and
Are you confessing?
No, we all do. I mean, we all sat in the locker room when it was, whether it was Tom, and in that case, it's Bill Belichick. Oh my gosh.
I didn't.
I was a counselor every morning. But at the end of the day, what do guys want to do in this league? They want to win.
Win.
And those guys win. And when you sit back and you recognize that, you appreciate it. I think the reason it was a little bit bigger deal, one, it's Bill Belichick and Wes Welker. But if you remember last couple years, there was a couple times Bill was on Wes for things. Because Wes said things in the media. If you remember the back and forth with Rex Ryan about the foot fetish and all that kind of stuff.
I thought that was great.
Wes
Welker had a great line.
It was a great
line. I don't want to stick my foot in my mouth. He was asked about the Jets game.
Mark played for Rex. Maybe he can talk about the foot fetish here in a little bit.
Wait a minute. Has anybody checked Rex for Mark Brunell tattoos lately?
But my whole
point. As long as Mark doesn't have a Rex tattoo, we're okay.
But
you'll never know.
And so there was obviously a little bit of a history.
Well, that's not saying no.
If I would have got one more year, maybe.
Does Rex change the tattoo of Sanchez's number if he gets cut?
Let me just read this one other quote here, and this is the one that's in it. When I'm answering questions from the Denver media, I'm not worried about what the Broncos people are going to think. He said, I'm worried about what Belichick will think. Isn't that crazy?
Well, listen, and I working in the doing national games, whenever you had to have cover the Patriots, and I had to cover in the playoffs and be on the sidelines in the playoffs, and then you have to deal with the PR. Everyone in that organization is scared to death to say anything. I mean, scared to death. And it's because of Bill Belichick. He runs the entire place with an iron fist. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but that's the culture. It's successful. They win. At the end of the day, that's what you're supposed to do as a head coach. So, you know, his system works. But it probably wears on guys. And the league has changed. I think the personalities, guys have changed. I mean, back when we played, I think there was more coaches like that. And it's changed, but Bill Belichick is consistent. That's who he is. And I think that's all that Welker was talking about.
And the key is, you have to win.
If you don't win, you can't get away.
You can't get away with it. You've got to win, and they win.
Loggy, you should be on Tebow, or on Tebow. You should be on Twitter.
Wait a second. First of all, that whole, where did Tebow's name come from?
Well, here's why. Because there's something called Tom Tebow. I am evil Tebow. I put Wes Welker's name in searching for the quotes, and there is so much incredible stuff from the evil Tim Tebow.
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, because he's not on Twitter.
Okay, but that was the worst transition.
I know. Sorry.
Honestly.
But evil Tom Tebow has 81,308 followers. It's pretty amazing. It's
pretty strong.
You got to see the picture.
Pretty strong.
Yeah. He has choice things to say about Wes Welker. I was just mesmerized by the eyebrows on this guy.
I'm a big Wes Welker fan. You know, the one thing though that it gets tiring with a coach like Belichick is that, you know, when you being in the National Football League, you got to be able to entertain a fan base as well as win football games. And I'm not saying that that's, you know, part of the job description, but I mean, hey, look, sometimes people take it so serious. Coaches
lighten up a little bit.
I mean, yeah.
Enjoy it.
Well, that's where I was going with the Tom Tebow stuff. By the way, here's how he describes himself. The evil brother of Tim, I throw right-handed, frequent strip clubs, and don't even go to church on Easter. I just got him a couple more followers. He's got great comments about Wes Welker.
You're out of control.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
But, you know,
trying to break it up here at the end of the show. We're too serious.
Well, we are serious. But, I mean, that's Bill Belichick. That's his personality. I mean, I'll never forget doing the you talked about that Bronco-Patriot game, you know, in the playoffs a couple years ago. We were talking off air about Tim Tebow and playing against the Patriots and everything else. I was on the field before the game talking to John Fox. And then anyone who knows Foxy.
Great guy.
Yep.
Playoff game. He's talking. Just, you know, shooting the breeze, hanging out, you know, no problems. Bill Belichick's right there, so I go to say hi to Bill. And you would have thought I had a turd hanging out of my mouth. I mean, he looked at me like.
Oh, well, you're getting out of control.
Are you sure you didn't? I could have. But he was looking at me like.
Yeah, who are you?
Who are you? No, he said, hey. And walked away. I'm like, all right, I'll go back and talk to Foxy. I mean, it just. But that's who he is.
Yeah.
And the bottom line, he wins.
Mm-hmm.
And if you win, then guess what? No matter what system you have, however you do it, whatever your personality is, guys are going to play, you're going to have success, and you're going to be the head coach for as long as you want.
How many coaches are like that left in the league today? I mean, would you put Coughlin in that category?
No, not anymore. I mean, you talked to Tom.
I mean, hasn't he lightened up
a
little bit?
Yes, he is. He's still hard. I mean, he's still disciplined. It's still his rules.
But he's not like Belichick.
No.
Who else would you put in that mold? That old, quote unquote, old school mold.
Well, I don't know him real well, but just doing some games of the Buccaneers, Greg Schiano.
Yeah, he'd be in that category.
He's pretty serious, and he's no nonsense, and he cleaned that place up in Tampa and did a great job. His first year as head coach, taking a franchise that was floundering, going nowhere with a bunch of undisciplined guys and turned that around pretty quickly. So I don't know Greg very well. I've heard he's a great guy. I've never met him, but he comes across as more of a disciplinarian. Yeah.
Yeah, a little gruff. Would you put Fisher in that category, Jeff Fisher in St. Louis?
No.
I don't think so either.
No.
No, there's one. I'm trying to think of the teams, but I think
Jim Harbaugh is pretty serious.
No. Well, yeah, but not like that. But he's a little different.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with you, Jeff. It's just a different kind of series.
Yeah, he's a little different.
A little out there now.
You know, and the ones that would be on the opposite end of the spectrum would be, you know, Pete Carroll, Gus Bradley, from what we've gotten to see so far.
Rex Ryan.
Yeah, tell us about the foot fetish.
Hey, you're getting out of control again.
I'm just asking him. Rex Ryan. He played for Rex.
Marvin Lewis.
I started all this with the Tom Tebow thing.
By the way, Marvin Lewis is one of the greatest guys. Have you guys ever?
Oh, yeah, I talk to Marvin. Every time I do a Bengals game, sit on the sidelines with him before.
Fantastic.
The game. Yeah, he's great.
Fantastic.
But here's the point I think, Jeff, you're making. There's more than one way to, you know, skin a cat. I mean, you can have.
Oh, be careful.
What? You can't say that?
Skinning cats, you know, on radio?
No, it's an expression.
I had nothing to do with that expression.
Skinning fish. Is that better? Can you skin fish?
Yeah,
Cleaning fish.
Cleaning fish. Whatever. There's more than one way to get a job done, is my whole point.
There you go.
So tell all the PETA people I apologize for using that.
They'll be outside of the bank by the time you leave.
Jeff has them on speed dial anyway, so.
Yeah, they're good buddies. Yeah. There's more than one way to do it. I mean, Tony Dungy was a guy who never raised his voice, you know, more of a father figure, got his, and it worked for him. The Tom Coughlins, Bill Parcells, you know, Bill Belichick's in your face, hard, gruff. They win. At the end of the day, you want to win. Pete Carroll wins in Seattle. You know, we're all believing that Gus Bradley's system is going to win here. And if it wins, it's a great system. It's a way to do it. If it doesn't work, go find someone else.
But those gruff guys are slowly but surely disappearing in the league. I mean, it's they are far outnumbered by the Mike McCarthys of the world who are, you know, hardline about their play card, but for the most part are much easier to handle.
Yeah, but Mike's got a little – he's got a little old school about him. You know, but he's not like – Belichick, where he's
well. There's no one like Belichick. I mean, no. Nobody.
Well, how many coaches?
Where's Sean Payton fit in?
Now he's not. I would say he's very balanced. He's a Parcells guy. There is a time when he's serious and he's like that. You knew what the expectations were, and if you performed, you know, he complimented you. If you did poorly, he got after you. And I thought he was great as far as balance. The best coach I've had as far as, you know, having, you know, the ability to you know. Be both ways.
We all know how
many organizations have the structure that Bill Belichick has in New England, where he is coach, general manager, everything. I mean, honest question, how many?
There's not many left that have all the power.
No.
And I don't know if there is any.
Well, Andy Reid in Kansas City, he got to hire his
GM. Carroll, and Pete Carroll kind of directs that. I mean, yeah. He has a GM, but, Pete is kind of overseeing, I think, almost everything.
I'm telling you, Loggy, you got to get a Twitter handle just so you can see some of this funny stuff. It's incredible. I've been following myself. I've been laughing for 10 minutes.
Is that what it's called, following?
Yes, you got that right. Congratulations.
I'm laughing here for 10 minutes on just an errant Wes Welker search. All right, that'll do it. Tomorrow night, Public's Tailgate Show, 4:30, right here on Jaguars Radio. Have a great night, everybody.